Greetings, friends. This is a Dhamma talk on the simile of a swift pair of messengers that the Buddha used to teach the importance and proper application of Shamatha Vipassana meditation. This talk includes Sangha Q&A and discussion and was recorded at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey on October 4, 2016. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace. So tonight's talk is on a swift pair of messengers. If you have any questions while I'm reading it, just let me know. And we'll have our hold our comments and discussions until we're done. So, a swift pair of messengers in the Pali Canon is an article on the Buddha's teachings on Shamatha Vipassana found throughout the Pali Canon. The Pali Canon preserves the original teachings of the Buddha and is considered the most authentic and least culturally influenced of all the teachings of the Buddha. And there's an article on the website about how that was maintained, and it really is kind of a remarkable story that what we're getting from the Buddha's original teachings are pretty authentic to what took place 2,600 years ago. Keep in mind that when the Buddha himself actually taught the Dhamma, there were no divergent schools of Buddhism, only his direct teachings. The two combined aspects of quieting the mind, or shamatha, and insight into the three marks of existence, vipassana, are taught as the meditation method used as the eighth factor of the Eightfold Path, known as right or skillful meditation. As can be seen in the following story, the Buddha taught that shamatha and vipassana, tranquility and insight, are both necessary components of an effective meditation practice, with an emphasis given to shamatha, quieting the mind, for insight to be meaningful. Shamatha is often spoken of as developing samadhi, or a well-concentrated mind state. Shamatha is also referred to in terms of developing jhana, or a state of deep absorption. And we've talked about the four levels of meditative absorption before. You all remember that, I'm sure. There's an article on that, too. The Buddha consistently taught that shamatha vipassana, with the emphasis on shamatha. This should not be misunderstood to infer that shamatha, or quieting the mind, is more important or singularly more effective as a separate method of meditation, only that a quiet, tranquil mind is necessary for true insight to arise. Without a quiet, tranquil mind, discriminating or discursive views will continue to arise, leading to more confusion and delusion. Without insight, there can be no understanding of the causes of discriminating and discursive views, and no clear and direct path towards understanding and release from confused and deluded views. So, I mean, I talk about this a lot, but one of the reasons why I don't teach just meditation is because the Buddha didn't just teach it. He didn't just say, go meditate and you're good to go. He understood the common human problem of conditioned thinking or confirmation bias, and so he developed an eightfold path so that we could overcome that common problem. And this specific insight into the three marks of existence is really what we're looking for. And the reason why I emphasize that is we can get distracted or sidetracked into analyzing anything that occurs and how I feel about it and how I'm looking at it and make an object of almost anything for meditative analysis. And that really doesn't work. What we're looking for is our relationship to this impermanent world and how we continue eye-making. And that's really what the whole practice is about. Is that clear? Any questions about what I just said? Okay. Once the mind is well concentrated by awareness of the breath in the body, insight into the functioning of the mind is observed so as to recognize or gain insight into discriminating and discursive thought and the effects of delusion within an impermanent, ever-changing environment. Ultimately, what is recognized is that all thought is impermanent and fleeting, and the objects of all thought are impermanent and fleeting. This leads to recognition and abandonment of conditioned thinking, allowing an unfettered mind to arise. In the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Buddha teaches as the first foundation of mindfulness of holding in mind the breath in the body. And that simply was what we had. This is how we begin our meditation practice, being mindful of the breath in the body, the first foundation of mindfulness. A quiet and well-concentrated mind allows insight into impermanence, not-self, and stress. This story is from the Samyutta Nikaya, and that's part of the Kamsaka Sutta. One day I'll explain what all those different books are about. The Buddha's words, suppose, monks, that there were a royal frontier fortress with strong walls and ramparts and six gates. In it would be a wise, experienced, intelligent gatekeeper to keep out those he didn't know and to let in those he did. A swift pair of messengers coming from the east would say to the gatekeeper, "Where, my good man, is the commander of this fortress?" He would say, "There he is, sirs, sitting in the central square." The swift pair of messengers, delivering their accurate report to the commander of the fortress, would then go back by the route by which they had come. Then a swift pair of messengers coming from the west, the north, the south, would say to the gatekeeper, "Where, my good man, is the commander of this fortress?" Now, remember this. I think this is incredible. This is the Buddha telling this story. This most awakened man taking on this lighthearted role to convey this important message. He would say, "There he is, sir, sitting in the central square." The swift pair of messengers delivering their accurate report to the commander of the fortress would then go back by the route by which they had come. The Buddha continues, "I have given you this simile, monks and nuns, to convey a message. The message is this: the fortress stands for the body, composed of four elements, born of mother and father, nourished with rice and barley, subject to constant rubbing and abrasion." I love that line, constant rubbing and abrasion. There's always something working on us. "Subject to constant rubbing and abrasion, to breaking and falling apart. The end is coming for all of us. The six gates stand for the six internal sense media. The gatekeeper stands for mindfulness. The swift pair of messengers stands for tranquility and insight, shamatha, vipassana, and meditation. The commander of the fortress stands for consciousness. The central square stands for the four great elements that make us up. The earth property, the liquid property, the fire property, and the wind property." What an important thing to point out. The central square is us. We need to place ourselves in that central square if we're to have the benefits of those swift pair of messengers, shamatha and vipassana. We have to be here to be part of it. The breath in the body brings us here. The accurate report stands for unbinding, and ultimate unbinding is nibbana, or awakening. The route by which they had come stands for the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha taught that 2,600 years ago, so it's good enough for us to learn it now. The path is the Eightfold Path. The messengers are the meditation method within that framework. The six gates stand for the six internal sense media, meaning the six sense base, our five physical senses and the sixth sense of our discriminating thought. The gatekeeper stands for mindfulness. So we open the gate to our own understanding with that refined mindfulness. And how do we refine it? We use the framework of the Eightfold Path. It's a remarkable sutta. The swift pair of messengers stands for tranquility and insight. The commander of the fortress stands for consciousness. Going back to the Eightfold Path, the route by which they had come stands for the Noble Eightfold Path, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation. That's the end of the sutta. The Buddha finished that whole story on the Eightfold Path. So as can be seen, the swift pair of messengers of tranquility and insight combined are very effective in gaining entry through the fortress of conditioned thinking and providing the skillful means, when combined with the moral and ethical practice of the Eightfold Path, of recognizing and abandoning confused and deluded thinking that would otherwise continue stress and suffering. The Buddha offered no other instruction for gaining insight and understanding to the problem of craving, aversion, and delusion but the Noble Eightfold Path. Engaging in the teachings of the Buddha in the great matter of awakening, or of understanding confusion, delusion, and the underlying unsatisfactory life experience. The Buddha often taught to find the root of a tree or an abandoned hut for seclusion to meditate and develop the other seven supportive factors of the Eightfold Path before other activities, even altruistic endeavors. So many of us will be, many people, when they take to just the idea of Buddhism, they want to engage in Buddhism in a way that is more focused on doing good works rather than actually finding the root of a tree in an empty hut and developing meditation and that broader framework to truly understand how we can be of helpfulness to all people. Again, the Buddha recognized that many years ago. The reason for this is another teaching of the Buddha. It is through Buddha's words. It is through understanding, meaning wisdom, that one fully understands other suffering and through compassion that they undertake to counteract it. It is through understanding that one crosses over and through compassion that one can bring others across. Likewise, it was through compassion that one can become the world's helper, and through understanding that one can become one's own helper, developing the Eightfold Path is how we do that. The following are a few other sources from the Pali Canon where Shamatavipassana is mentioned. This is not a complete list. The Buddha's words again: if a monk would wish, may I be dear and pleasing to my fellows in the holy life, respected by and inspiring to them, then he should be one who brings the precepts to perfection, who is committed to inner tranquility of awareness, who does not neglect jhana, meaning developing meditative absorption, who is endowed with insight into the three marks of existence, and who frequents empty dwellings. So why do we frequent empty dwellings? To meditate. Again, emphasizing shamatha, not neglecting jhana, and becoming endowed with insight, frequently meditating in empty dwellings or places of solitude, the Buddha continues, there is the case where a Dhamma practitioner has developed insight preceded by tranquility. As they develop insight preceded by tranquility, the path is born, the Eightfold Path. They follow that path, develop it, pursue it. And as they follow the path, developing it and pursuing it, their fetters are abandoned, meaning our confused thinking is abandoned. Their obsessions destroyed. Then there is a case where a Dhamma practitioner has developed tranquility preceded by insight. As they develop tranquility preceded by insight, the path is born. They follow that path, develop it, and pursue it. As they follow the path, developing it and pursuing it, their fetters are abandoned. Their obsession is destroyed. Then there is the case where a Dhamma practitioner has developed tranquility in tandem with insight. As they develop tranquility in tandem with insight, the path is born. They follow the path, develop it, and pursue it. As they follow the path, developing it and pursuing it, their fetters are abandoned, their obsessions are destroyed. Then there is the case where a Dhamma practitioner's mind has its restlessness concerning the Dhamma well under control. There comes a time when their mind grows steady inwardly, settles down, and becomes unified and concentrated. In this one, the path is born. They follow the path, develop it, and pursue it. As they follow the path, developing it and pursuing it, their fetters are abandoned, their obsessions destroyed. Whoever declares the attainment of arahantship, or awakening, full human maturity, in my presence, they all do it by means of one or another of these four paths. And the Buddha's not pointing out four separate paths. He's pointing out that as we develop shamatha vipassana meditation, at times it seems like insight is something that's really coming up and that's what's occurring. At other times, it's a quiet mind. And we can notice these or we don't have to notice it. But it's a combination of insight and tranquility that develops the entire Eightfold Path. And the Buddha is really emphasizing the importance of developing the Eightfold Path in this, isn't he? Then the Buddha continues. Wait a minute. The Buddha, these are my words, the Buddha describes again the necessity of shamatha vipassana as the meditation method leading to all obsessions destroyed. As for the individual who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment, his duty is to make an effort in establishing those very same skillful qualities to a higher degree for the ending of mental fermentation. So that's the end of the talk tonight. What do you think? Any questions or comments before we go around the room?
Can you read that whole thing over again?
But slowly.
Yeah, slowly. Yeah.
I think I have ADD. Oops.
A swift pair of messengers. I'm sorry, I read so fast. Next time, tell me to slow down. I do. It's one of my favorites. Everybody gets the point of this, that of what the Buddha is using this simile of a swift pair of messengers to place the importance on developing both a quiet mind and insight into the three marks, and that we do that through the framework through developing the Eightfold Path.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Is there a
Please.
It gives us a picture of how mature the Buddha is after he's awakened and for him to see all that he sees. It begs the question, what sort of man was he before when he was living in his castle with his wife? Do we know anything about him? Apart from he lived in a castle with his wife.
He was a wild man. He was a real party guy. Well, it is a great question.
We're halfway down this road before he started.
We don't know an awful lot, but we do know some things. There's some accounts that the Buddha gave. There's not a lot. He didn't talk about himself much, but he did. He did talk about it enough so we have a basic understanding. So, the Buddha, from the minute he was born till the time he left the palace at 29, he was given everything that he could ever want. In fact, a lot of the indulgences were pushed on him. This was an accepted part of the society. He was sleeping with a lot of other women, even when he was a very young man, mid to early teens, probably. That was part of it, but he was also given everything else that any kid could ever want. It wasn't just that, and he was still dissatisfied. But the reason why is that his father knew, for a few reasons, I won't get into the whole story, that Siddhartha Gautama, the future Buddha, would either become a great spiritual leader or would become a great king, following his father's footsteps. And of course, the king wanted Siddhartha to follow his footsteps and stay in the kingdom. And he thought that if he gave the Buddha every single thing that he could ever want, and also protect him from the outside world, what was going on outside the gates, that the Buddha would just say, Siddhartha would just say, well, this is great, I'm staying here. Why would I ever want to leave this? But even at a very early age, there was this gnawing need to understand what was going on, even though at that point he didn't know there was another way of looking at the world. There's a story of that's told during his awakening story where he discovered Shamatha Vipassana meditation. And it was when he was 5 years, he tells a story. When I was 5 years old, he became very frustrated one day with something his father had him doing. And he just decided that I'm going to sit here and just be quiet. And this meditation method came on him. And it had an effect on Siddhartha as a 5-year-old. It calmed his mind. He got into his activities and forgot about this, but he remembered that meditation method as when he decided at the end of his 6 years of struggle trying to understand, and out of frustration, he then told himself, I'm going to sit here in meditation until I awaken, and that method spontaneously came back to the Buddha, and that's the method that he used eventually to awaken and develop this whole practice. I guess I should finish the story. So he stayed in the palace until he was 29 years old, becoming ever increasingly dissatisfied with this great life that he was living. And at the age of 29, he left the palace grounds under the dark of night against his dad's wishes. And that's where the legend is that he saw, first he saw a wandering mendicant, somebody walking around in rags. He saw somebody sick, somebody old, and somebody dead on the side of the road. And it so shocked him because he had never seen this before, was never exposed to any of this in the palace grounds, that's what got him focused on trying to understand a common human problem. And one of his thoughts was, when he saw the dead guy laying on the side of the road, that if, and remember, he came from this incredible life of indulgence, if in the end we're all going to end up like that poor soul on the side of the road, what's the sense? Why even bother? What are we doing here? He also noticed while he was walking through town, there was an incredible amount of competitiveness and aggressiveness between people. And again, it so shocked him because he hadn't seen that before. And he wanted to understand, what is the problem here? What's the common human problem? What leads us to this? What leads us to spend a life chasing after acquisitions if we're all going to die? There's got to be an answer. And that's what set him off on his search. And he found out what the problem was. The problem was creating a sense of I, a permanent I, in this environment that is always impermanent and always ends up in one place, laying on the side of the road. There's got to be more meaning to life, isn't it? And what he discovered was that the meaning in life is to be living in the moment, to be mindful of what's occurring. irregardless of what is occurring, to be fully present in life as life occurs. And that's what he taught. That's what the deepening concentration that's developed in Shamatha Vipassana meditation within the broader framework of the Eightfold Path gives us. And what do we get from that? We get an incredibly meaningful life because we're actually living our lives. We're not caught up in being stuck in the past, what happened, or we're not stuck in the future, what might happen. That's called conditioned thinking. We're able to let go of all that conditioned thinking and simply be present with life as life occurs. And if we find ourselves in palace grounds, we'll be happy there. And if we find ourselves on the side of the road, about to die, we'll be happy there. Well, we'll be accepting of it anyway. Boy, that was quite an answer to that question. What was the Buddha's life like? So that's what we know of his life. You know, there's not a lot. But we do know that he had this inner thirst from an early age to understand what was going on in his life. And I think we all do that. I think everybody's born with that. The problem is we get so caught up and so distracted by needs and desires that we forget what's most important. We forget what's missing. And what's missing is understanding the ongoing process of me. You know, I talk about that a lot. When the problem is a self-referential ego personality. An awakened human being, the problem is no longer a self-referential ego personality. The ego is simply a function of the mind. Helen put it great last week. It keeps us from walking into trees. That's about the importance that the ego has. It allows us to make decisions in a physical world that are necessary to make, but not so it rules our life, not so we create an identity over that thing that is simply a function of the mind. Any other questions or comments? So let's go around the room. Start with Maura. Maura, how's your practice?
My practice is well, thank you. I have two thoughts on the reading on the sutta, because it's beautiful, and I read it a number of times, and I always think about partly also when he says this fortress, like, and we're looking, like, and we begin to have insight into that there is no real I in there. Like, doesn't he say something that, I don't want to get off on that one. Because what I noticed, and what I noticed tonight even before you read that, I've really been my meditation tonight and a lot of times is really settling in, and I'm starting to recognize more where even in meditation I'm kind of checking out in meditation, kind of following just a real pleasant, you know, thing. So I'm being more like the guy, you know, mindfulness, not the guy, the thing, you know, that aspect of really watching what's going on with my mind and seeing that process happening, feeling a sensation, and seeing that it's kind of, you know, it's very interesting to kind of work with pain and discomfort and see how much of that, you know, is just the mind's wanting conditioned thinking to try to get you, you know, to go somewhere. So kind of observing that process has been really interesting to, you know, watch the impermanence of sensations, to watch the lack of a thing that's experiencing it. Some of it here's, anyway. So from that perspective, I think the tranquility is really important to be able to watch those things unfold and be at somewhat of a distance and have kind of that. Because I can say I can get really lazy in my meditation, and I'm not guarding the sense gates. You know, I'm chasing what's coming in the sense gates and, you know, planning something ridiculous or whatever. But, like, and I guess what I would say, I found it very inspiring, those three different ways, you know, in a sense of tranquility and then insight, but all of them, you know, cultivate the Eightfold Path. And I find in my own life, the more integrity and the more stronger my mindfulness gets, and the more I'm, you know, holding all those factors in mind, the more relaxed my life is, and the more I can see more clearly in meditation, and the more, so it's just an interesting process. That's all I say, you know, the unfolding, watching it happen, being right effort, right view, and seeing how much dukkha, or seriously, the mind just feels like creating all the time. Not feels like, you know, it does. I don't know a better word. I'm just going to say that's what it seems like. The mind's function is to create this suffering. And if we don't catch it, it just goes on a rampage. And, yeah, it causes pain in the body, too.
I was listening to you. Yeah, thank you. You're the, I think I said it last, maybe Saturday, that the Buddha could have described the First Noble Truth almost as after saying, instead of there is dukkha, there is distraction. Because it's the distraction of dukkha that not self relies on to keep itself front and foremost. And the more there's chaos, the more there's me in it. The more there's that constant distraction of what I need. So the simple act of bringing the mind to calm interrupts that ongoing need of keeping things going, keeping things stirred up. And it works beautifully that way.
And I think one of the things that really I catch, and I'm trying to really come back to it, is where you talked at the very end about, you know, I don't want to have gone through my life not actually living my life. And that's where the real tranquility and insight becomes. Like, it's so much better to just be with what's occurring than in the mind, you know, spinning off and trying to solve something. It's just so agitating. So anyway, I'm really enjoying my life for the past day.
It's about time. It's about time. Thank you. Ron, how are you enjoying your life?
Today.
Good. We're on a roll.
Yeah, meditation's going pretty good. I'm starting to realize as I get more and more into it that there's less internal conflict. There's less of this, I want this way, but I want it.
Yeah.
That's kind of stuff starts to fade away. And boy, does it make for a much more relaxed and more effective way of dealing with stuff that comes at you.
Yeah.
Because you're not trying to come at it from three different directions at the same time.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
It's pretty nice, yeah. And these are the practical benefits, you know.
To Lorna's question about the Buddhist state of mind before he was enlightened, one of the things I read recently was he used the word dismayed. Mm. He was dismayed by the, you know, what the state of his life was at that time. He was just so upset. That he just had to do something. And I recognized that feeling from when I started out, you know, decades ago, that it was just so awful, so painful. And it wasn't like there were terrible things happening to me, but the senselessness of it was just getting to me.
Yeah.
I just had to do something. And yeah, I just read it like a week or so ago. It's like, oh, yeah, dismay.
Yeah. We talked about that, too. We were both like that when we were younger, too. I had a great life when I was a kid, you know. I wasn't in a palace, but I have everything a kid could want. And I was dismayed. I was miserably dismayed. I was angry. But it was because what was being presented as important and what I should be chasing after seemed so meaningless. Well, yeah, I could go on and on and on. Thank you. Kevin, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, John. I really enjoyed the sutta and reading your article. I don't have many sort of reference points, but, you know, how long I've been practicing, but this is kind of one that really makes me really aware of that, and the way that the Buddha talks about shamatha vipassana meditation and sort of the foundation for which everything is built upon, you know, looking back, it's like, wow, okay, that's what I've been building. And yeah. An image was popping into my head. I've always sort of been into iconic images, icons, and I was a kid, and everybody's probably seen this photograph. I think it came from Life magazine, and it's a picture of a man in I think it's Brittany, France, and he's in a lighthouse, and there's a huge wave coming at him.
Yeah.
He's sitting there, and he looks pretty darn calm. And it made me really think about, you know, I want to be very clear that I'm not trying to adapt the Buddhist sutta or teaching, but that the shamatha vipassana is the platform on which that's built, and, you know, the waves could be dukkha or whatever, any metaphor interpretation you want to put on that. But it just really made me think of that image, and gave me a lot of comfort in that image.
Yeah.
And that guy looks pretty comfortable with a lot of big waves and maybe dukkha flying around, and he's enjoying his life, so I sure am enjoying my life. Thank you all for being here. So.
Thank you. That's a great image. Thank you. Matt, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. Practice is going well. A couple things. One, kind of thinking about what Mark said, and in terms of my own meditation practice, and at times sort of experiencing this continuum of laxity and excitement in the meditation. Obviously gross laxity would be just falling asleep, and you know, gross excitement would be just fidgeting.
Yeah.
But sort of, you know, finding myself somewhere on that continuum at times. And the other thing that I thought was really neat about this sutta was that shamatha vipassana, particularly the tranquility and insight, is really, it's almost like a metaphor for the whole Eightfold Path, in that if you're practicing right speech, tranquility happens.
Yeah.
That generates a very tranquil internal state. And I don't want to use that word, but you guys know what I'm talking about. You know, right view cultivates this tranquility, you know, where insight into what right view is in the moment, it happens. You know, right action, right livelihood, even, you know, if you're doing, you know, if you're out there selling guns and drugs, maybe you're not really tranquil. You know? You probably aren't, you know, because you're probably dealing with things that would prevent you from being tranquil. So I think that the tranquility and the insight of shamatha vipassana is the Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
The Eightfold Path is how you cultivate shamatha vipassana. And you cultivate the Eightfold Path through shamatha vipassana meditation.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you for saying, placing the emphasis on that. That's what this is about. It's not just meditation. The Buddha's reminding everyone that was listening to him and us 2,600 years later that it's a complete practice. It's the Eightfold Path. I know many, many people, myself included, that took to a meditation practice alone. There's even a word for it called shikantaza. It means just sit, just sit, 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 sit. You'd sit for hours and hours and hours. With the idea that if you do it long enough, hard enough, Buddha nature's going to arise. Well, maybe, but it never happened to me, and it's not something the Buddha taught. I think I told you, it's gotten kind of late. I was going to tell the story about the guy, but I told it. Now I have to tell it real quickly. I got a call about, this is maybe a year and a half ago, from a guy that had heard about me, and it's interesting, I've never met him, even though we planned to meet. He was very agitated. I could tell on the phone there was something wrong with him. And he's told me right away. He says, I'm 38 years old. I'm living the American dream. I got a beautiful house. I think he said he was in Newtown. Like a beautiful house, kids, cars, beautiful wife. And he says, and I feel like I have nothing in my life. And I'm already getting an inclination of what the problem is. He says, and I've been meditating for 20 years. And now I kind of know. I says, well, tell me about your meditation practice. He says, well, I've been sitting Zazen, focusing on my breath, focusing on nothingness. And I said, say that again. He says, I've been sitting Zazen for 20 years, focusing my breath, focusing on nothingness. And it was like a light. I could hear the light go off over the phone. He said, holy, for 20 years I've been focusing on nothingness, and that's what I'm experiencing in my life. I said, you got it. You know, what we focus on is what we're going to get. What we hold in mind, that's the true teaching of mindfulness. What we hold in mind is going to determine what our experience is in our life. And if we hold in mind the eight factors of the Eightfold Path, that mindfulness will lead us towards awakening, towards full human maturity. If we hold nothing in our minds, we're going to achieve nothing. If we hold principles that only continue confusion, delusion, and suffering, rooted in ignorance, remember dependent origination, what are we going to experience? Confusion, delusion, and suffering. It really comes back to, what do we hold in mind?
Tranquility and insight.
Tranquility and insight. So, great. Keith, good to see you.
Good to see you. My practice is going well. My mind is a lot less cluttered. I find that the less cluttered my mind is, the less distractions I need in my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm at a stumbling point right now where after almost half a century of my mind being conditioned to my whole ego, trying to let that go is hard. It's almost like when you find out there's no Santa Claus. You kind of knew.
What?
I haven't accepted that one yet either.
You just sent that back.
He's watching you. He's watching you. Nod your head.
You kind of knew, but when you actually have to face it, you just kind of need some time to cry out.
Yep.
So that's where I'm at. I know where it's got to go, and it all makes sense. It's tough to let all that stuff go that you think you were.
Yep. You're really coming up against the heart of the matter. It's why I always say be very gentle with yourself, and that also means don't expect more than you're ready for. You're using the framework of the refined mindfulness that's developed through the Eightfold Path. That guides you through these situations. There's often times where it just feels like it's almost too tough. And I think those are the times when we're really integrating what we've learned so far and applying it in a direct way, and that's why it feels like, geez, I'm losing everything. But ultimately what we're losing is nothing. The teachings get us to the understanding that this thing that I think is a self, the Buddha used the word anatta, to remind us what you're holding on to is not a self worth defending or worth maintaining. It's the cause of all the difficulties in our lives. But when you're there, it sure feels uncomfortable. So again, you take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. We're fortunate to have this. And really the only thing to do is to continue the practice. And you're too far gone now to really. I mean, there's a certain point when, you know, you get down that yellow brick road after enough, you can't get off it, you know, no matter how many crazy monkeys there are. I was like, monkeys used to scare me. And it's really a good place to be as long as you can accept it. So be at peace with it. You're in a good spot. Thank you, Keith. Liz, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Good to see everyone. Survived the family reunion.
Wow, that's it.
20 people, one house. Eight houses, one house. So I focused on right speech. I focused on right view. I lived in gratitude that everyone could take time out of their lives to be there.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I plan on that.
That's okay. That's okay. We're, you know, we feel whatever we feel, and we're just so fortunate to be able to be present for something like that, isn't it? Instead of needing it to be different.
Yeah. It was good.
Thank you for saying that. Helen, good to see you.
Thank you, John. It's wonderful to be here. I've gotten something from everything, you know, something from what everybody has said tonight. Something Laura said helped me out, I think. A lot of times when I'm meditating, there's so many thoughts coming, like one after the other, that I'm wondering, am I meditating or am I just sitting? And I try to create space between those thoughts and all, and I keep thinking, you know, why am I thinking all of these things? But something Morris said was she sort of separated it from yourself and your mind. So if I think my mind has all this stuff going on, not so much I have all this stuff going on, I put a little bit more space between it. And something she said gave me this image of, you know, that game where you have the magnetic stick and there's all the filings under the paper and you draw these pictures? Well, that's what I thought my brain gets like sometimes. It's like the magnet. I guess my brain is the magnet and all the things just kind of stick to it. So I have to somehow, you know, change the force field there. So that they don't stick, maybe a little Teflon or something.
They refer to that all the time. They say, you know, an unawakened mind is like Velcro, and an awakened mind is like Teflon.
Yeah. Okay, so I need a little more Teflon.
I have
Etch-a-Sketch brain. So, and I totally love what Matthew said, because it just was so clear.
The
Santa
Claus.
It was just so, you know, you just put it so clearly. It just, you know, there were no extra magnetic filings in there. It was just what needed to be in there. So that was very, very helpful too. So, so I got a lot out of tonight, and I hope to take it all with me my next sitting meditating thing.
I hope you do. Thank you so much.
Oh, I also thought, just really quickly, that there's a good reason that now is called the present. It's a gift.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's a mistake that those two words are used that way.
That's good, as long as we can access it.
No,
you know. Thank you.
Oh, that's a hard
ho, 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 Judy.
Name one that hasn't been.
I know, and I love what Matt said.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really great tying in everything,
mm-hmm.
kind of mirroring themselves. But my practice is going okay. I was a little, a lot of family last week, this past week, especially with my mom. but I just find that these teachings and being here, you know, it's not easy for me a lot of the times, but I'm aware of that, and I just know it's a temporary thing. And but what I'm struggling with at the moment with this, which has kind of been central for a while for me, is I know she's not going to be here that much longer, and I want to do what people say and enjoy it and treasure it and all that, and I don't know, it's hard for me when I'm there. But, you know, I mean, sometimes it's good and we connect and. But I'm struggling with that still, and but at least I guess I'm aware of it, and you know, I can be there for her, which it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm thankful, grateful for I guess the level of consciousness about it that I have, but I still feel like I have a long way.
Thank you. And that long way to go might seem like a long way, but it's really not. But most important is to, I know you hear me say it a lot, is to be at peace with less than peaceful mind states. It's simply what's occurring. You know, you're agitated. It's a difficult situation. You know, don't expect yourself to be any different either.
Can I give you one movie reference? Sure. On Golden Pond.
There's the lifelong tension between the father and the daughter. And
Henry and Jane Fonda, wasn't it?
Yes. And how they resolved it by just each saying what they thought it was. And then it was like, okay, well, all right, you got to come over more now. And it was like over.
Mm-hmm.
They just put it out there, and then it was like, okay, the thing they hadn't been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it might be helpful.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Judy. Mary, good to see you.
Oh, it's good to be here. I've been away.
But
I haven't been because of technology. I have had the help of the entire Sangha in so many ways, so many things that people have said. And, you know, I was driving to Boston and driving home, so I had lots of time to listen. I was in Florida, lots of time to listen, even though it was a busy time. So it's been very good. And my focus has been on trying to deepen my understanding of the Eightfold Path. Like, I understand it, you know, intellectually, but to live it, you know, off the cushion. Really trying to understand and integrate that for myself. So that's something I've really been thinking about. And I may be saying the same thing that you said, John, but to you, Judy, to be at peace with not wanting anything to be different than it is, and give yourself permission to not want it to be any different. Just
thank
is.
You.
Yeah, that's the secret.
This is great class.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Drew and Frank, I know you guys come from quite a ways away. If you want to get out early, do you want, you got something to say, or are you going to stay anyway?
Oh, I'm always ready to get out early.
So what do you got to say for yourself then?
I
just want to give you the, I'm not throwing you out, but I know if you want to.
I think my practice has improved in terms of awareness. I always like that feeling coming on when I do engage in meditation, to the point where it alters my experience a little bit, and that's awareness for me. My surroundings, the reading just reminds me that my gatekeeper is angry and don't let anybody in.
Yeah.
Anger's my defense, and it's forever present, and the distractions that come up for me in meditation are typically either aggressive or controlling.
Yeah.
And so it's something I've been aware of, and it's been an issue for me throughout, gentlemen said 50 years, just about 50 years.
Yeah.
I know no other answer to it than to get meditation, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I was born angry,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the only thing that helped eventually was this practice, the only thing that let me work through it. And it will. I mean, and so now you have a recognition of it within the framework that you can actually do something with, you know. We're so fortunate to have that. And thank you for bringing that up tonight. Frank, good to see you tonight.
Good to be here, John. Good to see everybody. Thank you for sharing, everybody. My meditation practice is great. I don't falter on that. I need it. And peace of mind was never easy for me. I had difficult, turbulent life growing up the way I did. But, you know, today I can sit with emotions and feelings and thoughts all day long, pretty much coming, whether I used to perceive them as negative or positive, and not really put a label on either one of them. I kind of just like sit with it and feel not separate from it, but total peace with it. There's times that, you know, I get swayed in either direction, but I can recognize it and pretty much identify pretty quickly that I'm starting to identify with the emotion and personalize it. And so it's been pretty cool. My wife threw me a curveball Friday
I thought I had the Friday night to myself, and she said to me at 5:30, can you take a shower and go with me to a concert? I'm like, what concert? My wife's a Christian. It was a Christian rock concert in Trenton. And I was like a deer in headlights. My wife, what's going on? And her girlfriend backed out. But anyway, I was able to be in that arena, Sun Arena, whatever it's called. And it was pretty interesting. Earplugs helped. It was pretty good. That's all I got.
Nice. Thank you, Frank.
You should give him a standing ovation.
Well, I'm going to a Buddhist rock concert. You want to go? Thank you, Frank. It's good to see you.
You know, at the end of a long week, and you know, just see
him,
that's
so beautiful.
Really inspiring.
Yeah, Dhamma works.
I need to be up at 4 a.m. on Saturday. I work Saturday.
Really inspiring.
Double standing ovation.
Yeah, again, just the practical benefits of development. I mean, that's where it's applied, you know, going to a rock concert on a Friday night when you don't want to, but you do it. You know? You
just
do it gracefully.
I had to tell her at the end, I'm like, I was smiling, but I wasn't really having that much fun.
Well, you know, of course there had to be that.
I'm gonna look calm.
Thank you, Frank. Andrew, good to see you. How are you?
And my practice is, I'm aiming practice to become less busy and just more mindful of my day. And sometimes I'm able in the morning, sometimes in the evening, sometimes both. I'm trying to take other opportunities to find time to sit down and be tranquil. And today I did something really interesting for the first time. I took the Frenchtown path up past Wall Street down to the river where this place called Flat Rock. Walking out on there, it's a wonderful expanse of these flat, outward jutting rocks, and I sat down on one and closed my eyes and started to meditate. But I heard it was a kind of empty dwelling, but it wasn't empty. It was, you know, the breeze was coming from it, so on. And I became tranquil, and it worked. So,
good. Good for you. I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah, that's it. You know. Thank you for sharing that. See you guys soon. Get back safe. Take care. Thank you, Andrew. That's wonderful. Travis, is it? I can't see you that good. I just wasn't sure if it was you or not. It's good to see
you.
It's good. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
How you doing?
All right. It's been very busy. We're usually working on Tuesday night, so, and Saturday. It's morning, so you never get out here.
Well, I'm glad you made it tonight.
Thank you. Yeah. So, practicing off and on, you know, it's tough for a 5-year-old to find a free moment. And, you know, we're just trying to meditate here and there, keep the peace, and keep a peaceful mind, and just, you know, enjoy the moment. And, just when you're talking, it just reminded me, I don't remember if it was a philosopher or a psychologist, but he was saying that when you have, like, a deep memory, you know, of, like, just something in life, it's, like, the only time you're actually really awake. Like, when you have, like, those memories, like, you know, riding a roller coaster, a family reunion, you know, birthday party, whatever, you know, flying down a road at 100 miles an hour, those are, like, the only times in your mind that you're truly, like, awake to the world and conscious, and you know, you're out of that like just lull of you know, your day to day routine. And you know, I think meditation helps you be a little more awake and remember what you're doing, you know,
without the need for roller coasters,
yes, or like a near death experience,
right? Yeah. Yeah. Flat rock.
Yeah, thank you, Travis. Good to see you tonight.
Good to see you too.
Kate, how was your meditation?
Good.
You were able to engage in the method? You recognized it when you were caught up in your thoughts and you came back to your breath? Mm-hmm. That's a meditation practice. So that's the beginning of it. If you're going to pursue it, I would suggest start with very short periods of meditation, 2 or 3 or 4 minutes. And if you can do that twice a day, If you can be part of our Sangha, that would be very helpful. There's a recording of this meditation on the website, on my website. There's a card out there that you can take that with you, and if you want, you can sign up for our newsletter. But most important is just be consistent with your practice, and if you can be part of our Sangha, you know, it would be great to have you back. But welcome to our Sangha.
Thank you.
Lorna, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Been a very, very good night again. I think this week I've sort of realized, you know, saying that the peace is a less than peaceful mind. I think I'm just beginning to realize if you're not, you're just keeping the cycle going.
Yeah.
And it just made so much sense to me this week, that phrase.
Thank you. That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It really is. Reaction continues dukkha. You could say dukkha depends on reaction to continue. Diane, how are you tonight? Good to see you.
Well, tonight.
I thought we were into Christmas carols. We're over with it. Tonight?
And everything that everyone has said, tonight. The thing that I'm more amazed than ever each day that I am wise enough to choose to do it, on days that I work really hard physically, I think in the evening I'm just too tired to meditate. And what I'm finding is when I do, it relaxes me and rests me in such a way that I end up having an evening instead of just vegging out or going to bed at 8 o'clock. And that's maybe that's just a physical benefit or something like that, but it's what it says to me is this meditation and I'm not, when I say meditation, I'm including the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths, because the whole awareness of the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths keeps meditation, I want to say pure, or keeps it healing or something like that. I'm finding that it feels like sometimes it's not just for my mind, it's for my body as well.
It is, yeah. Thank you. Anna.
Hi. Hi, Bonnie.
it's been a really interesting couple of weeks, and it's been pretty extraordinary to sort of like going in through the ringer and then using all the tools, the Eightfold Path, the presence, the spaciousness, and as it just keeps evolving and evolving, and to apply it and to see benefits, you know, in real time, and catching myself and being clear, and also not stressing myself out by being more stressed during stressful moments, so that when the pressure arises from so many things that are been avoiding a lot of deadlines and not even choosing to do anything that has a deadline because I don't want the stress, but there are things that if I don't do that, I won't be able to have my livelihood in some way. So I've been able to do it with, even though there's, but with kindness and with being able to hear what people say, getting my ego out of the way so that I can do it at that. So I don't maybe get an A, maybe I got a C on it in terms of but I'm okay that's just, I'm okay with wherever that is, and which is pretty huge.
It is huge. It is. Yeah, significant.
But anyway, it's you know, tomorrow might be all different. You know, you wake up and kind of feels like you feel like you're being chased by something. You know, like when you used to be a little kid, nobody wanted to go down to the basement. You go down again. You know, you go down. I don't know. And you like, run off the steps really quick. My mother would say, "What? Nothing." And it's sort of, but it's, you know, when things that make you anxious or things that make you insistent on something, if I can just, it's okay. It's like looking at what the monster is. It's really not a monster. It's not anything. It's okay. It's okay. You know, I want to be mindful. But, so it's really been great. Yeah, thank you.
And that's where it's really good for your body.
Pardon me?
I said that's where it's really good for your body.
Right.
Yes.
If you always feel like the saber-toothed tiger is right behind you,
uh-huh.
Your adrenal glands are,
blow them out.
On fire.
Yeah. There's so much evidence out there now about how the benefits of meditation, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
The underlying theme, I think, Matt really said it beautifully, is that as we develop this and integrate the Eightfold Path, one of the significant ways that it lowers stress is as we deepen that integration, we know that how we act and how we're perceiving each situation is within that framework. It doesn't have to be any different. And we allow ourselves to remain at peace continually, that mind of equanimity. It really is all part of that. So, a few real quick announcements, and then we'll close. I have done another redesign and rebuild of the website from the front page. It won't look all that much different, except there's now it's called a toggle module. It's a drop down with all the categories of the different talks, and then in the middle of that is a link for the most. It says recent talks, but if you click on that, it has all the talks that are posted in chronological order. So you will get the most recent ones. It's also much more mobile friendly, or at least it should be. If you have any comments, I'd like to hear it. If you have any problems, please let me know. I've used some pretty intricate scripts on there, but they should be they should work well with most modern browsers. But let me know. Uh-oh, you found something already?
No. When you have that set up with the talks, do you have the article and then the associated talk together?
Yes. Yeah, nearly every talk has nearly every article now has the talk associated with it. And as I give a new talk, like tonight, I'll probably put this talk on.
The comedy channel?
Yeah, this is it.
I think it looks great. Yeah. It really does. What you did do it. It's
great.
Easy to use,
yeah.
And I've really...
It's pretty seamless. That's
yeah.
Right.
Great job.
Right.
Yeah.
If you hit a button, you don't go through another five...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every from the front page, it should be just one or two clicks to any other article and talk
mm-hmm.
that you want to get to. So, you know, yeah. I mean, I've been wanting to do it for a long time, but it's 70-80% of the people that access the website are doing it on a smartphone or a tablet, and there's a certain way that it needs to be for that. So, hopefully, it's better. Yeah, but please let me know if you have any problems. So,
can I also just add? I mean, I know you guys know this. But the amount of work
I'm sure
that all that takes.
Oh, that's
a but seriously,
it is.
I lived with John, and sometimes 18 hours a day sitting at the computer.
But not obsessive, not me.
I'm not clinging
to the end.
Somebody said something tonight, I think, about, like, kind of, I don't know, maybe it wasn't here, but about when, it was a woman I work with, you know, computer language is its own thing, you know, and it really requires an incredible amount of patience and diligence to stick with something. And, like, you know, I'd be like, forget it. Like, by saying, like, this is just too hard. Like, I want to do this. But so I'm just putting it out there, too, that, you know, you stayed with, you know, hours and hours into the wee hours of Comcast going down, and, you know, just staying with something until you crack the code and get it going, and the podcast just to get them up, it's editing and everything. So it's like a non-stop job, and you've done such a beautiful job, and I'm always inspired. I was thinking of that tonight when you consider a spiritual friend and you consider what their values that they bring that you admire, and I'm thinking a lot about Donna as a Donna dinner comes up. And, you know, the greatest gift that we can give is to have integrity and for our words to be followed with action. And, you know, you are probably one of the most generous persons when it comes to that. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. I couldn't have done it without you.
I just didn't want to put a donation in tonight.
I know. I was just thinking. All that to save $10. Thank you, Mark. Thank you all. It is truly a labor of love.
With a well concentrated on it.
There's the, and part of doing this is I changed the server that hosts the talks. And so there's a new, this is all linked on the, in the email and on the webpage under podcast. There's a page that has, it's the Cross River Meditation Center podcast, official now. And you can go there. It has all the talks with no articles if you find it easier to access it that way. That particular host has their own app that you can, it's called Podbean. You can get their app, and they'll send you every new article, every new talk as I post it up there. Not necessarily an article, but as long as I'm posting a talk, you'll get it immediately. And it's still also available on iTunes if you want to subscribe that way. And there's more. I think that up until last week, iTunes only had the most recent four, and now they should have the most recent 20 or 30 or something on there. So however you listen to it. The Donna Dinner is coming up, November 22nd, Tuesday of Thanksgiving week. I hope you can all come, and please bring family, friends, and all that, especially people that you know could use it. But there's a link on the website to an email. We can use some help with setting up and cleaning up. I got to get a donation bucket. We're going to take donations this year and give it right to Julie. She's been very, very generous with us. So I'll get a basket out here next week that we can contribute to that too. But if you can volunteer, or if you like some gift information, please go on our website and then let Maura know. The form that's on the website will go directly to Maura about what you think you can do. And most importantly, that you show up. You know, it's more important than anything. So
and you practice.
And you practice. There was another announcement, but that's enough for tonight, I think. So let's finish with Metta. With my words on Metta.
Will there be a winter retreat? Was that canceled?
Oh, it was canceled. Never really got off the ground. One of the things that I'm thinking about is to do something impromptu. One of the reasons why I canceled it is I didn't want to have a retreat all set up, and that week we get a blizzard and get into all kinds of difficulties with monies, and can we get our money back, et cetera. So I just thought it'd be better to leave it alone until the spring. But I'm thinking that, depending on how the weather and things are working out, I might just have like an impromptu couple or 3 days up there. And, you know, we'll just, if we can do it, we'll do it, and whoever can go, will go. I think it'd be really nice to be up there in the winter, as long as it's not snowing up there or getting up there. So. Well, if it doesn't snow on the way there, on the way back, which is going to be hard. You know, I've been talking to Buddha and see what he can do. So, yeah, we may do that. You know, it'd really be nice to right after the
getting
first of the year.
In would be nice.
Up there, yeah. As long as that would be okay.
But. Yeah, hiking those hills and the snow.
It sounds like we want to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that being said, if you want to plan it, I will. But, you know, there's always that difficulty that we get a big snow right when we're supposed to go up there. So.
Have you ever done an retreat instead of retreating? Like, do something here?
Right here? We've done
like
some one-day retreats.
Day, or?
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to say. You should really do it. That'd be my
who was it? That, was it Liz or Mary? You mentioned that recently too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just do
all right. So we will.
Like,
we'll do
it. I did 2 weeks ago. I just made a decision, October, you know, whatever it was, and I just did it because otherwise you end up going back and forth.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll plan a one-day retreat, maybe right after the Donna dinner, before it gets too busy, maybe the first week of December or something like that. So let me look at the dates.
Say in the heart of winter.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know,
well, we can do it again.
Well, again.
Well, we've done them in the past, so let's... I will. I'll look at some dates, and we'll plan it, and we'll put a retreat together. A nice day right here.
A nice potluck.
Absolutely.
All right. That's it.
John did a one day for my sisters and I, and that's what we did. We brought food and.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun.
That would be really nice because it could be kind of like a Sangha day retreat.
Right.
Sangha Sangha.
Well, so I'll put it out there that the first, I'll look at the date, but let's say the first Saturday in December. Does that sound reasonable to everyone?
Say that again?
The first Saturday in December, whatever the date is. Does that sound like it's open?
Sure.
All right, so let me look at that, and I'll... You what?
I have a training that first Saturday, the second or something.
Well, let's make it the second Saturday then.
That'd be great.
Does that sound all right?
Yeah.
All right, I'll make sure that, I'll check the dates and we'll do it. Then we'll do another one in the winter, and maybe we'll go up to the Juan Dharma Center in January if we can get up there.
Yes.
And we could just, what we could do is, the building might be for sale. We could just pool our money, buy the building, and this could be...
You're talking about the Juan Dharma Center is going to be for sale?
No,
this
it's not on the market. Michael made with the right money. So I'm gonna get a donation basket for the Donna dinner. I'll get a bigger one to buy the building. Once it's filled up, we'll local crowdfunding. So let's boy, what a great class. Let's finish with
some richer
songs. You guys are
okay, but the ne'er-do-wells here.
Oh, no, give us time. We're on our way. Come on.
We should get into some creative visualization.
Lifetimes, right?
Yeah. So let's finish with metta. Find your relaxed and meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. And let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future that may have come up from our talk tonight. And in metta, the first object of our meditation is always ourselves. And generating feelings of deep love and compassion for the object of our meditation. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. And now bring to mind those that you care deeply for, and generating those same feelings of love and compassion for the objects of our meditation. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. And now bring to mind those you may be in conflict with, difficult relationships, and generating those same feelings of love and compassion for the objects of our meditation. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. and now bring to mind each other in this room this evening and all the other members of our Sangha. And extend your awareness outside of this room, across our community, across our planet, across all creation to include all sentient beings, and generating those same feelings of deep love and compassion for all sentient beings. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.